get started.
Yeah. So what I did last week is that I read the complete document and I was playing around with all the tools in the DRS and also with some pilot runs in the new environment. So everything seems okay. So I just need to start the actual script and everything.
Okay. How can we help?
I don't know. I mean, so I can just start with some small cluster first and try my algorithm there, and after that I'll make it bigger so that it involves multiple hosts and multiple and the larger number of virtual machines. So my initial thought is to run with just 5 or 10 VMs.
Mm-hmm. With one host.
No, it doesn't necessarily has to be one host. I will just create a resource pool. So the resource pool will itself figure out like which host it will consider. Right now I have got two hosts.
Okay. So what is your are you experiencing any roadblock at this point?
No, everything seems fine actually.
And that migration works.
Yeah.
Resource pool also works.
Yeah.
So you can constrain the amount of resource you have on the pool.
On the pool.
Do you need to have any sort of reservation VM in the host?
No.
You don't need that anymore?
No. Because initially I thought that I would restrict my experiment to 10 or 15 VMs or 20 VMs, but according to last talk, we anyway need to go beyond 50 VMs or 100 VMs to try our experiments.
Right.
In that case, we don't need to restrict ourselves. We don't need to create any reservation VM. So I will just try my algorithm whether it's working on a small resource pool, and then I will grow the resource pool to cover multiple hosts.
But for that small resource pool testing, you do need the reservation VM, right?
You don't need, because we don't need to test the DRS at that moment.
Okay, I see. So here you would do the you would ask DRS to make the resource allocation changes. Can you walk us through what you will be doing next with the small scale experiment?
Yeah. So the small, can you go to a board?
Yes.
Can you erase this part?
Yes, you can erase all that.
So right now I have let's say 10 VMs. So I'll create a resource pool to power these VMs. Now this resource pool, right now I have two physical hosts.
Right. So this is the small scale experiment you're talking about.
This is the small scale experiment. This is the larger picture. It is the larger picture. Now when the resource pool is small, it might just consider only one host. Instead of covering two hosts, it might just stay on the one host.
Okay.
And DRS will work on the back end, like from the vCenter server management.
Okay.
Now, when the number of VMs are small, it doesn't need to migrate any VM from one host to another host, because it doesn't make sense, because we won't do any constraint violation.
Right.
Or the load will not be higher. So in that case, DRS won't work, what I suppose. Or it might work, I don't know, but supposedly not. So the migration won't happen.
Okay.
Now, what I will do, my program will be completely a separate program.
Okay.
This will be my resource allocation algorithm.
Okay. So these are VMs that are already running at this point?
Yeah.
Okay. Hello?
Hey, it's Kaushik. Sorry, I was late.
No problem, Kaushik. We just got started and Sajib is explaining to us what he's planning to do next.
Okay. Let me get it.
Okay.
So this resource allocation algorithm,
yeah,
we collect the statistics from each host.
Yeah.
And or from each VM using the ESX top and gather the information.
What kind of information?
The latency stat, mostly latency related stat.
Performance? You need performance?
Performance I'll be inspecting from the VM.
But you need to go feed that into the resource allocation algorithm.
Yes. The resource allocation algorithm VM will report its stats, each VM.
Yeah.
And also the vCenter or each host will report the latency set.
Okay.
This is the performance.
Okay, so you need to have some client running on each VM that is continuously collecting performance information.
Actually, in my case, it's a VM inside. It's running separately from the resource pool. It's a VM running on one of the hosts that's collecting all the information. About performance from each VM.
But okay, so where is your resource allocation algorithm running?
It's on a separate machine, on a client machine.
But doesn't all this information eventually need to go there?
We'll need to go there. This VM will report everything to that client machine.
Okay. The resource allocation algorithm is running where again?
It's in a separate host. It's my desktop machine.
Okay.
Desktop.
And what is this other VM you were talking about earlier? Where is that running?
The VM is running inside any of the hosts.
Any or only one?
Only one of the hosts.
Okay. Why can't it run inside your resource, inside your desktop?
Because I'm using that host to make the resource allocation change of each VM.
You're using the VM to make the changes?
I'm using the VM to make the changes of all the VM, all the other running VMs.
In the host. So you're not using vCenter?
No, I'm not using the vCenter.
So why did we go about doing all this vCenter?
Because that's what I did before.
What?
That's what I did before in my previous work.
But if it's not applicable to this work and you're going to directly interact with each host, then why set up vCenter DRS?
DRS will work as a backend. I mean, we don't need to talk to the DRS.
No?
No. DRS will only work if I'm trying to do some resource allocation change, let's say for a particular VM, then the DRS will figure out, okay, this resource allocation cannot be done unless it is moved to somewhere else.
How does the DRS know that there is a violation?
Whenever you do some changes to the allocation setting, it detects that violation.
So the DRS is communicating continuously with each host?
Each host.
This is so roundabout. I mean, to me it would seem like you would tell the DRS how to make the allocations, and then the DRS would do it for you, right? I mean, can't you have it that way? Have the DRS do the allocations? And then if there is an allocation that cannot be satisfied within a host, it will do the migration as necessary.
The vCenter should have API for resource allocation.
I mean, that's, I thought that was the whole point of doing the vCenter setup in the first place.
I don't understand why do you need a separate virtual machine and host, because you can talk to ESX directly.
Yeah.
So why do you need to have a local virtual machine there?
Oh, that I created because at that time they needed a PAR library, a particular PAR library API, and that PAR library API needs specific PARL version, specific Linux version. So when I go to their website, they just say, oh, it's set up, already set up in a VM.
That version can be running on your desktop, right? While you run the resource allocation algorithm. Because that's the client side, right? So you can talk to you can talk to vSphere directly. You can talk to either the ESX directly or talk to the vCenter directly.
Yeah, I was expecting so far that your system would just interact or send information about new allocations and so on to the vCenter, and the vCenter using DRS would figure out how to provide those allocations. Like, was it on the same host or on a different
host? But if I do the changes there, it will automatically detect those violations.
I mean, I don't know how you can, first of all, make the changes that inside the ESX that are not adding up to 100%, right? So if you say, I want this host to reservation to be 50%, this other VM reservation to be 60%, does ESX allow you to do something like that in the first place?
It will report. If it cannot, it will report.
Report to who?
Report to my program.
The whole point is to allow your program to make those changes that violate, and then have DRS figure out how to fix the violation, right? But if it just reports to you saying, well, I cannot do it, then DRS cannot even know that there is a violation.
Oh, no. If some of the reservation cannot be met, from a program perspective, you won't see any error.
Mm-hmm.
But in the later case, the DI will figure out how to resolve that issue.
Have you tried that?
Yeah. I tried it with manually, like changing to go beyond the reservation, but beyond the host capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So DI just reports, okay, there are constant violations.
And then it does what?
It does migration to help to resolve that issue.
I see. So you're saying that it would work? Hello?
I think I just cut off, sorry.
No problem. So why do it this way? I mean, is it easier to do it this way, the way you're doing it, rather than communicating with vCenter directly and making the allocations there? Or you've already done this way?
I already done that way.
Okay. And you've seen that it works?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that's fine. It seems a little roundabout, but if it works, that's okay.
But straightforward way will be to talk directly to the vCenter API.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how we should write the paper, because if you want to describe this whole process, it's going to take.
That's how I did it. I've done it before.
I know. I think that's fine. But when we are writing the paper, we have to say that we are informing the allocations to the vCenter, which is enforcing the allocations, just to make it simple, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the other reason I was expecting it that way is because we went through all the trouble of setting up vCenter, and I was hoping that we'll use it, and now that we've set it up.
You actually want to try it? Because if you have to put it on the paper, you have to make sure it works.
No, it from what I understand, it does work. I mean, so vCenter does do
the
right
thing.
But it seems that the interaction with the vCenter is a roundabout interaction.
I know. I'm just saying, is it possible to ask the vCenter to violate?
I think the reason is different. The user, when I trial run the DRS, I use the vCenter API.
Hmm.
Right.
The client API, which connects to vCenter and you get the API.
Yes.
But the reason I created another VM is because I need to run a script.
Hmm.
So this API is manual API. So I need, and that VM is allowing me to do everything in a script way, in an automated way.
And changing the allocations.
Changing the allocations is just
using remote commands.
Remote commands.
Okay. Instead of pulling up a graphical user interface and typing the numbers in.
Right.
But sure, vCenter has a similar API.
Yeah.
But that would involve additional learning curve. So what you're doing right now is okay, as long as it works.
But that virtual machine is still talking to EGSX through network. Right?
Yeah.
So that, again, that virtual machine can run anywhere. It doesn't have to be on the...
Oh, no, that virtual machine can run anywhere.
Okay.
Just because it's a VMDK,
yes.
You cannot run that.
I believe that the API... the API from ESX is quite similar to vCenter. They are part of the vSphere API. So maybe there's not quite much change for you to run that virtual machine and then let it talk to vCenter.
Talk to vCenter?
Yes. So for your virtual machine, talk to vCenter instead of ESX.
Okay.
Yeah. You got my point? The API might be very similar.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. There's not a problem. This is, this is okay, but when you have many hosts, then you definitely have more overhead. Right?
Yeah.
You
have to inform every host of those changes, rather than inform the vCenter all at once of all the changes. Might make your life easier if you do it that way. But I'm not sure how easy, what is the learning curve involved in interacting with vCenter using your VM. But if it's straightforward,
I need a automated script, a scripting environment.
Right. So the same VM.
Yeah.
Now, which is talking to ESX.
We'll talk to vCenter.
We'll talk to vCenter.
Yeah.
So the same in scripting environment as before, right? Except that now instead of per host execution, you have total, a single execution across all hosts.
Yeah.
So I don't want you to spend a lot of time trying to figure that out. If it works within, say, half a day, do it. Otherwise, drop it and do the way you're doing it right now.
Okay.
Yeah. Don't come back next week and say, I'm still working on this
okay.
optimization. Okay, so let's... So, but then you also have some other way to collect performance. So you have some agents running within each VM that is informing performance.
No, I think that if the resource allocation script will take the performance from each VM at a certain interval. It will invoke the performance data from each VM.
How?
To SSH?
So you SSH into the virtual machine?
The
oh, but the VMware has all these here to collect performance from vCenter and ESX.
vCenter performance stats are different than the performance stats.
Application level performance.
Application.
Oh, yes. Okay. But how about resource consumption? You don't need that.
No.
Okay.
The resource consumption we can already.
Hey, Kaushik.
Hey, sorry, the Meditech is giving me trouble today, so
no
I just used to Skype.
No problem. Skype is good.
Yeah, not like
somewhat more reliable, I guess.
Mm.
Okay. Yeah, so, okay, so then inside, so you have an SSHing into the VM to find out what the performance is?
Yeah.
But how do you know that? When is that performance reported by the application? Is that continuously reporting performance or?
So, in the... That's a good question. That's the idea.
Continuously reporting performance. So do you have like some online applications that...
No, it's just a batch mode application. It will just report the performance in a batch mode fashion.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean by batch mode?
Batch mode means it's just, it will report in a 10-second, 50-second interval the throughput stats.
Okay. What kind of applications are these? These are the same applications you had before?
Yeah.
Do they report that performance in that way? Do these applications report performance?
Yeah.
Like that?
Yeah.
So the TPC benchmarks, and then there was, no, Rubis and TPCC, right?
Mm-hmm.
TPCW, which one was, were you using?
I'm using the FileBench workload.
FileBench, okay.
And the Rubis workloads.
So they all report
you
on,
can, you
on demand?
You can report in a 10-second, 15-second fashion.
Okay. Okay. And so you, it writes to some file and this SSH reads
from that file? Reads from
that file. Okay, so that's handled.
But I need to find out a way to run those applications continuously. So it doesn't stop. Because so far this is a workload, so it will stop after some time. After it finishes, it's given work. So I need to run it like whenever it stops, it will run again.
Rubis, you can configure it total time.
Total time, yeah. It
you can make it 1 day. It's no problem.
Just say, I mean, the time interval.
Total runtime.
Okay, total runtime. Okay.
And the file bench, I'm guessing, can be done.
Yeah, it can be done, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. And specify how long it needs to execute.
Yeah.
Right?
If you say 2-3 days, then it will just.
Right. And then it, you can, I guess, you have the code for each of these, right? So you can make it report more frequently,
yeah,
performance data.
Yeah.
Okay, but you haven't done that.
No.
Okay, so I think that's important for you to do next, so that you can use that information to do resource allocation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next thing, what about the SLA curve? Have you thought about that?
SLA curve, right now I'm thinking it's probably...
Do we need it, or do we just go with performance directly and say...
That's what I'm thinking, that I would just go directly with the performance.
Right, but we're talking about revenue maximization, which requires some sort of SLA, but could it be just...
Or we can take one workload, instead of running 5 different workloads, simplest experiment will be one workload, and make it like just proportional, like just map to what I'm thinking that if let's say the performance value reported from a particular workload is X, so we can make the SLA curve look like X or X square, something like that, or 2X, 3X. So
yeah, that would be proportional. Should achieve some proportional, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you need a minimum, so that, because if you do a curve like that, all the resources will go to the higher revenue generators, and the lowest guy will get nothing, right? So you need to have a little more sophistication in your curve than just a simple linear curve. Is it linear curve? This curve will start from zero, right?
We can add some offset there.
Right, you need to be a little more careful what you choose there. Okay, so... Alright, so that's the next step. And then, so then how does your resource allocation algorithm itself work? Can you walk us through an iteration of that?
The resource allocation algorithm itself?
Yeah.
So the algorithm, what will do is that it...
There is some starting point.
Some starting point.
What is that?
At any point is the current allocation.
What? How do you start bootstrap?
Now the bootstrapping, I'm thinking just equal allocation first.
Okay.
Just chopping the resource pool into equal division in both CPU and memory, and just feed it to EPM.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So you have the current allocation.
Yeah.
So I was thinking that run it for 5 minutes first,
yeah,
and collect the performance data.
Mm.
And based on the performance and the current resource allocation, it will run the algorithm will start.
Mm.
So the initially you have your...
Where are the models coming from?
The models are already pre-built.
Yeah, so they have to be there already.
Yeah,
right?
They have to be there already.
Do we have models for this environment? I think you said yes, right?
Yeah.
We already have models. Okay.
So, the performance models.
Mm.
so no. Performance models, current resource allocation?
Yeah.
And the performance set. Performance and latency set.
Mm-hmm.
So then it will start after let's say 5 minutes. Then the algorithm will. So we need to compute those delta values. Remember those delta p, delta gain, delta loss values from using the performance model and the current allocation.
Performance model and run it through the QoS system because these delta p and they are revenue. Run it through the SLA. SLA curve.
And so using all these statistics and the model.
Okay.
So it will have those delta p, delta gain values. After the resource algorithm iterates through one state, so it will do it will recommend some reconfiguration. Not doing the actual changes.
Okay.
It will recommend like what are the new changes after running one iteration. After the algorithm exits, it will tell that my VM to do those new assignments.
Okay.
For whatever VM it has picked up.
This one iteration has the ability to change multiple deltas or only one delta?
One complete iteration can be multiple delta.
Alright.
So it will store it in its internal state, like, okay, what is the internal state? It won't be the outside.
Okay.
So whenever an algorithm finishes, it will come up with next resource allocation state.
Okay.
And then it will just tell it the...
I don't see that arrow. Can you put that arrow there? I don't see that arrow where the...
It's recommended resource allocation.
Like, where is that going?
This recommended resource assignment will be given to that VM. I told you in the DRS
right.
To the VPC center.
By the way, these stats that are coming, latency stats, are coming from each host, right? They're not coming from vCenter. Can they come from vCenter?
Yeah, it can. Then I have to just, what Ming was suggesting, just learn the vCenter API, then I can learn both the things, like how to change it and also how to collect it from vCenter. So far I've been collecting using directly going to ESX host.
Okay, so then you make the recommendations, what happens next?
I feed it to the...
Draw the line, I think, so we know that there is some information.
Okay, so to the vCenter.
Right. Yeah, when we draw the figure for the paper, we can't have those other lines coming out. Right? We should have this sort of line that you
this
have.
This
should
be the vCenter.
Right, so the vCenter, correct.
Then vCenter will do the actual change.
Yeah. So vCenter can, in that change, maybe migrate VMs?
May migrate or may not.
Okay. And, okay, what's next?
Then it halts, and on the next interval, it again invokes those performance data, latency stat, and run the iteration again. And it stops until it sees no change in revenue.
Okay.
Well, it needs to calculate the revenue at each interval before invoking. The total revenue.
Okay. Okay. All right. How long is the due wait before you collect performance? What is the period between iterations of the resource allocation algorithm? A unique time schedule.
15 minutes.
15 minutes.
Is too much.
I was thinking 15 seconds or something like that.
No, 5 minutes. I think is a good amount of time. I mean, every time the algorithm will be invoked in 15 seconds, that's too fast.
It's too fast?
Yeah.
Well, it all depends on how dynamic the workload is, right? I mean, if there is a lot of...
If
the workload is really stable, I think our workloads are very stable, right?
It's very stable.
I mean, we don't need to wait 5 minutes. What are we going to see after 5 minutes? I mean, that we won't see in 5 seconds or 15 seconds.
Oh, 15 seconds?
What is the problem? I mean, yeah, 15 seconds is much faster than 5 minutes, but
what
I mean, if our applications don't really change,
all the computation it needs.
Wait, who needs computation?
The algorithm.
Yeah, I mean, algorithm is already run, right? After that, after the algorithm is run, how long do we wait to collect new performance stats?
According to my observation, it takes a few time to get the DRS to make the actual allocation. So we need to wait a little bit.
Okay, because memory needs to warm up and...
Exactly.
I see, that's interesting.
It doesn't happen immediately. It takes a few seconds.
Okay.
Even to just change the, let's say you tell the DRS or tell the host to just increase the allocation from 384 megabyte to 502 megabyte for a virtual machine, it takes a little bit of time to complete.
Hmm.
How do you inject the changes? So following Roger's question, how do you make this whole thing dynamic? What's changing? What's going to change?
The latency stat it might change.
So what makes that change? What triggers that change? If the workload is stable, nothing is static, everything is stable. What would cause a change and trigger the reallocation and migration?
What would trigger?
Yeah.
Well, we need to first run the algorithm.
Uh-huh.
To get to that revenue maximization point.
Okay, so we are already there.
Then in that case it will run fine, unless...
It will stop.
It will stop, yeah.
Yes,
it will stop.
Not run fine, it stops at
it
that
will
point.
Stop, okay. But when we introduce another VM or remove one VM,
okay.
Then it will be invoked again.
Okay.
No, well, every time you make a change in the resource allocation, okay, that will change the latencies that you observe. So that's why you need to do multiple iterations.
Yeah, we need to do multiple iteration, but I think what Ming is saying that at one point we reach revenue maximization, what we do at that point.
After that we stop, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is our goal with this sort of experiment is just to reach the maximum resource point. And the other issue is how do we ensure that our maxima is not local maxima, and it's in some sort of global maxima.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have local maxima, first of all, or not?
I need to try, right?
No. You have to think it through, right? Think about whether local maxima is even possible in the first place. Right? What sort of SLA curves will induce local maxima? What sort of performance curves will induce local maxima versus global maxima?
Just the idea.
Yeah.
I was just thinking on that. Like, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I was thinking about that actually quite recently, and it just came to my mind about 2 days back.
Yeah.
Just a completely off the table idea. We have discussed this local maxima and global maxima a couple of times in before also.
Yeah.
Earlier. And finding the global maxima through the exhaustive search is a little bit challenging, one approach that is very good to finding whether it's a local maxima, global maxima, or break the global maxima, local maxima, is genetic algorithm. That's a complete out the table idea, but that may demonstrate that okay, we are reaching the global maxima kind of things. You may want to explore early.
So genetic algorithm is like a learning algorithm, right?
It's not really learning algorithm, but it's purely exhaustive search algorithm. But the way the search works is pretty well known to break the local maxima.
I see. And there is also these other approaches like simulated annealing that also provide some robustness against local maxima, right?
Yeah.
I mean, hill climbing is the one that has problems with local maxima, and then you have simulated annealing that allows you to overcome that. I mean, I remember from a long time back. Do we, can we use any of those?
I think our algorithm is more like hill climbing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like it. So that's why I'm concerned about the local maxima in the first place. And we are sort of restricted to the hill climbing approach largely because we cannot change our resource allocations by too much.
Mm-hmm.
But then can we combine that with some other, you know,
and you cannot change it too much. That actually risk on getting into the local maxima.
Right.
Because that's the property of the local maxima.
Right. Right. Exactly. So can we say that once we hit a maxima, from that point onwards, to evaluate whether we are at a local or not, there is some other global maxima. Can we allow sort of arbitrary change? And I mean, it would be good to draw upon existing literature for simulated annealing and maybe these genetic algorithms that allow us to go beyond this local maxima problem, right?
Yeah. The typical approach in such is when you reach a local maxima kind of thing, you completely generate another data point that is completely out of the box kind of thing. Nothing related, that is not at all related to this particular data. And start from there and see whether you're reaching another maxima that is better than this one early. That's the basic concept.
Yeah.
Okay. How constrained is it cannot make drastic change? Right? That would lead to low accuracy in the model.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that certainly is true. I mean, mm-hmm. What will happen if we make these drastic changes is that the performance that we predict could be very different than the performance that we actually get.
Yeah, and so the global maximum that you think is the global maximum may be wrong because
yeah.
It's too far away. It requires a drastic change.
Right. Mm-hmm. But then it might also be possible that the predicted performance and the actual performance are different, but they are not too different. And then from that point onwards, we also have new latencies.
Mm.
We have updated latencies. Mm. Once we make a change, our latencies can also be updated, and then from that point onwards, we can start hill climbing again, right? So can we do those sorts of tricks to overcome this local maxima problem? I mean, once we get to have a starting point, right? We do hill climbing, see where we get to. And then allow a few random changes, start and do hill climbing again, and see where we get to. Right?
Yes.
And then we have a few maxima, and we can pick the maximum out of those.
Okay.
And say that's the, you know, that's sort of the global maxima. It may not be the true global maxima, but it's better than many local maxima.
So you're saying that to pick different other starting points?
Right.
Or bootstrapping?
Yes. No, well, we have a bootstrapping, which is fine, right? We start hill climbing from there. We get to a maxima, right? It could be local. Then we make another drastic change because this is our, let's say, our resource reallocation technique that we do multiple hill climbs from random starting points.
Okay.
Now, can we do something beyond a random starting point? Can we assume that the latencies are fixed, that they don't change, and then allow for arbitrary delta change? And that could be another starting point from which we can start climbing hill again, right? So those sorts of things. And then when we get to a maximum point from there, if it's the same maximum as where we were right now,
mm-hmm.
then we, I don't know what we can do at that point. But if it's a different hill, right, then we can allow another arbitrary delta change starting from that hill and then see if there we can find a new maxima or not. Right? We can do some of those changes.
Okay. But we also need to consider the speed.
The speed at which it actually allows us to respond.
How long it's going to take. So this goes back to the question, what should be your control interval? Because I think you need an estimation how long it would take to do this whole iteration. And you don't want to wait for too long, right? you want to be able to reach the maximum as soon as you can.
Yeah. So maybe 1 minute?
You can measure it. So how long it will take to put this coagulation?
I mean, one thing which you can do is to make the delta change and see how long it takes for the performance to stabilize by polling very frequently. Say every second you poll, see what the performance is. And the performance may start increasing, let's say, and then it'll, you know, plateau out. And so the latency to get to the plateau or stable performance, for how much is that? Like for a delta change, it would be good to understand that for different applications.
Okay.
And you can report that as part of your paper results, right? Say when you make a delta change, for the system to adapt to the new allocation and the performance to stabilize, it takes a certain amount of time. And we have to wait for at least that much amount of time before we run another iteration of the algorithm.
Okay.
Right?
Okay, now I see what you're saying. The thing you're saying that about the hill climbing, about like whenever I'm at a point, so I'm searching for multiple delta labels.
Right, and you're climbing some hill, right?
Mm-hmm.
That hill may lead you to a local maxima. How do you jump from that hill to another hill? You may have a higher maxima.
I think those are techniques that they can just borrow it.
Yes. The only thing is that those techniques may not have this weird behavior where you'd make a large change, there is a completely different expectation, right? I mean, those techniques might assume some stability, which we may not have here, especially with the latency, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we should borrow existing techniques as much as we can, given our constraints.
Okay.
So can you draw this figure so that we can include it in the paper?
Yeah.
I think this is a really important one. And instead of having your system communicate with the host directly, make it communicate with the vCenter.
Yeah. I think I'll just get the API. It will be easier for me also.
Yeah. And are there multiple resource pools or a single resource pool? I mean, do you want to consider that?
I'm considering one resource pool.
For the paper, do you want to consider multiple resource pools?
Useful.
Does it make sense? Why would something like that be useful?
Can one resource pool spare multiple ESXs?
Just an abstraction.
Right. So then I guess the DRS is who is done within one resource pool? Can it be done across resource pools?
DRS will act in two cases. DRS will check the competent violation of the resource pool. The reservation of the VM, so it's the constant violation thing in the resource pool, and also the load balancing in the host. It will do both of these.
The rest of my question is, will DRS migrate a virtual machine from one resource pool to another resource pool?
No, one host to another host.
Only to the host that will be the same resource pool.
Yeah.
Technology?
Yeah, I'm out of battery here. Okay, good. So we'll meet again next Tuesday, same time.
I think what they will do in the next week is to first, I think what you said is important, is to check each VM, to poll it constantly and monitor it constantly, those things. And also the vCenter API, if it's straightforward.
Yes. And you have the resource allocation algorithm implemented already, right?
I have the algorithm implemented, so I just need to the script which will run the algorithm and poll everything.
You need to create the SLAs. Think about that. How
SLAs,
you want to
yeah.
bring that into the picture.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. I'll see you next week. So Kaushik, do you have any final comments? Hello. I think you may be on mute.
Yes. No, I think you're good.
All right, good. So talk to you next week then.
Talk to you next week. Thanks.
Yeah. Bye.
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 So Ming, are you joining for lunch with the candidate? I guess so. Are you joining for lunch?
Yeah, probably I'll have to meet with the students. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll try. Yeah, you
okay.
Can finish the Pakistani, I'll just go further down to it.
Okay.
Bye.
All right. See you, Sajib.